So my name is Sheila Feinberg. I'm the executive director of the New York City Coalition for a Smoke-Free City. And we're going to talk about the Smoke-Free Parks and Beaches campaign, a little bit about tobacco use in New York City, and then finally, information about the coalition. Of course, here's my disclosure statement. I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. So I just said that part. So in the interest of time, I'm going to go a little fast so that we make sure we have time for questions and answers. As many of you already know, smoking is the leading cause of preventable death everywhere, and it's also in New York City. And almost one out of every three preventable deaths and one in seven deaths overall are smoking related. And I think what's most interesting here is that tobacco companies spend $1 million every day marketing their products in New York. So in New York City, as some of you may know, we're quite proud of our successes. We're down to 14% now in New York City. That's because we have a comprehensive approach, and some places in the country have that, and some places do not, but we are able to have that. That includes price increases, hard-hitting media, cessation services, public policy, and free nicotine patch giveaway programs. So you can see on the slide how each one of those interventions have helped to bring the smoking rates down. So right now we're at a historic low at 14%, which means 22.8% of current New Yorkers, or 1.3 million people, have successfully quit smoking. So that begs the question, who actually is still smoking? So approximately there are 853,000 New Yorkers that are smoking, 18,000 public high school students, adults with less than a high school degree, low-income New Yorkers, adults who drink heavily, and or who suffer from mental illness. And finally, this is something interesting for us in New York, is that 73% of New York City smokers are non-daily or are considered light smokers now, 10 or less cigarettes daily. This map somehow seems a little inappropriate right now with the storm going on, so I feel like I should have another map up here. But but this is a map with the highest smoking rates, and if I were to change it, I could show you the flood zones. But you can see it's actually hard to see up there. But the darker shaded colors are where there's higher smoking rates. So that means in the Bronx, Queens, and then actually a lot of Staten Island. So a little bit about the Coalition for a Smoke-Free City. We're a health advocacy group. We promote a tobacco-free New York City. We like to provide the community with a big voice against big tobacco. They're spending $1 million a day. We get, I don't know, maybe $2 a day, but we do a lot of good work with it. We do receive state and federal funding, and we're in a fortunate position. We're able to award grants to community organizations and community partners. And then finally, we're a program of a larger nonprofit organization, Public Health Solutions. So our areas of focus are not unique to yours, but we are increasing smoke-free environments to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke, reducing youth exposure to tobacco marketing at the point of sale, and then finally, encouraging voluntary adoption of smoke-free building policies. So here's a little animated graphic that we're excited about. Research and data, content creation and earned media, community support, outreach to key stakeholders. Put that all together, they equal a successful advocacy campaign. That's what we have found has always worked for us. And I'm going to walk you through that a little bit with the Smoke-Free Parks and Beaches work. But for research and data, specifically what we're talking about is our partnership with the New York City and state health departments and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and then also other community partners that do research. Because whenever you're doing policy work or trying to do a policy campaign, you need the data to support the argument why you're pushing for something. So for us, policy research usually includes feasibility and impact analysis, data collection and surveillance, to understand tobacco use and marketing practices over time, and evaluation. We also do content creation and earned media. This is our new infographic. We want you to use it. That's for secondhand smoke in the home. But we develop educational materials, we raise awareness around smoking, and we generate earned media. Here's a listing of some of our community partners, our national partners, of course, the American Cancer Society, American Lung Association of the Northeast, American Heart Association, Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. And then these are more New York City-specific partners that we work with. But it's important to note that these partners work in those areas that I showed in the map earlier that have the higher smoking rates. Also, we talked about, in that chart, we had outreach to key community stakeholders. I love this slide. I take great pride in this slide because this is our wonderful staff and community partners meeting with local elected officials to talk about the policy work. So what our community stakeholders help us to do is to disseminate the created content and educational materials, identify additional influential partners who will join for meetings. We share letters to the editors with each other and op-eds, and we collaborate on organizing both citywide and local community events like a World No Tobacco Day. And then finally, sharing resources and data to develop joint educational materials. And we're going to talk about it a little later, but we also work with youth. And this is a picture of Asian Americans for Equality and the LGBT Center to highlight the work that we're doing with pharmacies and having youth help us with the work with pharmacies. So what we all came here for, smoke-free parks and beaches. So this is a nice photo of the mayor signing the bill. We're surrounded by some of our national partners and then also the commissioner, Tom Farley, and then some other folks, elected officials. So policy change through legislation. So as many of you know, in 2002, New York City amended its Smoke-Free Air Act to make almost all workplaces, including restaurants and bars, smoke-free. And then in 2009, we expanded it again to prohibit smoking on the grounds near entrances and hospitals and healthcare facilities. And then most recently, we expanded it yet again to prohibit smoking in New York City parks, beaches, and pedestrian plazas, which is kind of unique to New York City to have these pedestrian plazas. And then also we just thought it'd be helpful for you all to know that institutional policy, the City University of New York, which has over 23 campuses and impacts over 560,000 students, all went smoke-free. It took them a little while, but it's all smoke-free now. And so to get to the, you were just talking about the litter. So why is smoke-free parks and beaches? We have this wonderful picture of cigarette butts in the sand. The biggest argument was protecting public health. New Yorkers are disproportionately exposed to secondhand smoke. We did a study and found that 57% of non-smokers actually had higher levels of cotinine in their blood compared to, I think it's 45% nationally, but so we're a little higher than the national average. So that seemed to be enough of an argument for a lot of the elected officials and community members. And then we also added to protect our environment. That's another big reason that we were pushing for it. Cigarette butts, as you pointed out, do not biodegrade, and they make up 75% of the litter on New York City beaches. So this timeline, I've done a lot of policy work over the years. This is an amazing timeline. We did it in less than a year practically. And I chalk that up to having a supportive mayor and a city council that was ready to go with something this dramatic. I also chalk it up to the coalition and our partners because we were able to push the issue for everybody and to give people cover for why they would actually want to do this policy. So in June of 2010, the coalition held a press conference on Coney Island. For those that don't know, Brooklyn is a really expansive beach that's probably now underwater. September 16th, the bill was formally introduced as Intro 332. And then about a month later, we had a press conference because we didn't see it moving the way we like to see it moving. And we had over 70 people at the press conference on the steps of City Hall. And we had a lot of reporters there, and so we were able to keep pushing the issue. In February, the city council passed the bill. The vote was 36 to 12 there. I only point that out because it wasn't, even though it was a fast campaign, it was still a campaign. There were still a lot of people that we had to convince. And then in February, later that month, the mayor signed the bill into law. And then it became law, or effective 3 months later. So some of the strategies that we use to promote smoke-free parks and beaches is, again, we created content and we developed educational materials, including fact sheets and PowerPoints, infographics, and these were all tools that we would hand out to our community members so that when they met with their other constituencies or they met with an elected official, everybody was working from the same page, you know, and then they could also add in, obviously, why they felt the need to go smoke-free. We also educated community members and policymakers, and also unique to New York City, we had community boards, which are like local governing councils, and we had 59 of them in New York City, so we wanted to touch all of them as well. And then we generated earned media. We had a pretty substantial letter to the editor campaign so that all the local papers, especially for the city council members that were on the fence, heard from their constituencies and from their constituents, I should say, saying, well, we actually want to support this. You know, we live here and we want to be able to enjoy this park. And so that's how we were able to help build support among elected officials. So here's a slide. This was a national letter to the editor. We did get a lot of national media as well, and local media. And again, you can see some of the slides from our press conference, or pictures, excuse me, from our press conference, and some of our educational materials that we generated. We had we partnered with the New York State Department of Health, and they ran a feel-good campaign, which was novel for them. Everyone knows about their hard-hitting campaigns. This was their feel-good campaign. And then the state also ran a campaign. So those are side-by-side there. And then, again, see photos from the press conference. So the coalition has, unlike a lot of others, we have a website, a Twitter handle. One thing to mention here, and I don't think we have a separate slide for it, but for Facebook, we found that if you did a Facebook page just on the issue itself, you were able to get more likes versus the coalition itself. So it was interesting, like, because not everyone's going to be supportive of public health. You would think they might be, but not everyone is. Some people really just care about the waves and the parks, and they're more concerned about the green and environmental argument. So those folks all joined that Facebook page. So that was pretty interesting for us to see. I think we have over 600, I'm looking at Dan, but I think we had over 600 people on that page. And then finally we have our website. You can check that out. So increasing momentum and support after implementation. So one of the questions that we always got when we were asking for it is like, how are you going to enforce this? And, you know, and I would say with a straight face, and still with a straight face, that New Yorkers will enforce it, self-enforce with other New Yorkers, because 75% of New Yorkers support this policy. And we're finding that that's actually true, but there was a lot of skepticism on the front end about that. So we decided to create, again, some educational materials, and we did another press conference to, again, raise awareness about the new policy, make sure that people had the tools and they understood the new policy. So the graphic that you see there, that actually folds down. Right now it's folded out, but it's a Z card. And on the other side, there was a map of the borough with all the parks that you could go to that were now smoke-free. So one side had this information, your cessation services, a little information about the bill or the new policy, and the other side where you could go to enjoy the new smoke-free parks. So again, you can read, you know, we continued our letters to the editors and had events. So we've learned that, you know, there's some best practices and some challenges to coalition building around a policy area and just in general. And for us, we found to be, these are the most effective ways for us. And so working with a variety of partners, again, for Parks and Beaches, it was not just public health, but also the green groups and the parks groups that helped us. We developed relationships with the press, individual reporters. I like to joke or say that, you know, a reporter at a local paper, you never know where they're going to go next. They might start at the Columbia paper or the Riverdale paper, but they might be working for the New York Times in 5 years. You just don't know. So build those relationships early on at the local level. Getting buy-in from decision makers is key, and from key stakeholders. Decision makers and key stakeholders aren't always just the elected officials. They're the people in the community that the elected officials listen to. If they're not going to listen to you, sometimes they'll listen to a local leader. So it's really important to make sure you're reaching out to those folks as well. Creating content and educational materials, I mean, that's a given. You just have to make sure that you have as much information out there. And then finally, and this was newer for us, to use social media. It really was a new thing. Oh, 5 minutes, okay. To use social media. I only have 4 slides to go. Challenges to coalition building. So those are the best practices. Here are some of the challenges. So competing with other policies and program priorities. So on that first slide, I said that we're also working on smoke-free housing. We're also working on point of sale. So there was a question about, like, how do we still work on those two issues when we still are working on smoke-free parks and beaches? Working with different stakeholders and community partners. And sometimes that's an issue because some community partners really don't care about smoke-free parks and beaches. They really cared about point of sale. And so, again, addressing those concerns and making, you know, and having them still be a part of the smoke-free parks and beaches work. Navigating the political landscape, I mean, that changes in New York City all the time, so just being nimble. And maintaining support for the initiative, that was something that, you know, we got some press that we're ready to go, the New York Post in particular saying, oh, you know, that policy isn't doing anything, they haven't issued any tickets, people are still smoking, and they would go out to find the smoker that's still smoking, and, you know, just, again, just staying vigilant on that. And then finally, engaging youth. Like, that's always a challenge, I think, for folks. And we always want to engage youth, but it's sometimes harder to engage them around a larger policy area. So that's what we've learned. I'm going to stop myself here. We'll take questions later. So thank you.